Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show with hosts Phil Huff and
Julie Calamine. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Julie.
Well, we've got a very interesting show this morning. We're going to be joined by a local author, the actual director of the Idaho Mythweaver Organization, and of course, a student of Native American culture, Jane Fritz. Good morning, Jane.
Good morning, Julie and Phil.
Good morning, Jane.
Happy to have you here this morning.
Thank you.
We'll be beginning Jane's interview in a little while, but would like to begin with some weather and a little information about what we've all been up to.
Yeah, the weather cleared up after a fine weekend, second weekend for the festival. Everything was actually under the stars, unlike the previous weekend.
It was perfect. Yeah. Phil, did you have a good time?
That was fabulous. The shows are always great. It's a great community event and nice to see music celebrated, the arts and music celebrated in our community in such a great fashion.
I know you were at the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, but were you at other?
Yeah, we always do the final night. Oh. The final night's a lot of fun to go see the symphony and the fireworks and the osprey feeding their young. It's just everything that's great about Sandpoint.
It was my first festival. I saw Ben Harper, and we enjoyed it very much. It was great.
And so the weather continues nice today. We have a high of 91 forecasted from the National Weather Service. Sunny all day, clear all evening with a low in the mid-50s. And it's going to repeat this at ways tomorrow with a few clouds moving in tomorrow evening. Slight chance of thunderstorms on Thursday. The weather's a little unsettled, but it's only 20%. So that means it's gonna rain somewhere that we can see. But it looks like it clears back up Thursday night, and Friday we're back into the high 80s, low 50s, and just continue on with our fine summer weather.
It's perfect, and it's what I love about Idaho. Sweaters in the morning, t-shirts swimming in the afternoon, and back to sweaters at night. You feel like it.
Yeah. Well, let's get started with today's interview. Do you want to give a little background on our guest this morning, Julie?
Well, I will, and I'll also ask Jane to give us a little bit, too. Jane Fritz is, as I mentioned, a local author. She's got a very interesting book written about the Pend'Oreille Lake area. It's more than just a trail guide. It's a very interesting book about history, culture, etc. That was published a few years ago, but it's a wonderful resource book. Additionally, she's the director of the Idaho Mythweaver, and she's just an all-around interesting person. She knows a lot about plants and culture and everything. I've enjoyed getting to know her. So, Jane, with that introduction,
thanks,
hello again.
Well, I have to say that I guess it's living here a long time. It's hard to believe, but I've almost been here 4 decades.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's a long time.
It sure
to
is.
To call home some one place. But, yes, and when you were talking both about the festival, which was wonderful, and I'm a volunteer for the Green Team. And I don't know if you know this, but we compost and recycle, and we have some landfill. We try to avoid that. But we composted 5,000 pounds of waste this year. And it was, that's just an incredible amount of garbage that would normally wind up in a landfill. And that compost goes to is soil, and then that soil goes to the healing garden. So it's pretty exciting. And then talking about the book, we were talking about doing this today at the farmer's market on Saturday, and I was selling my book at the Oak Street Market. And a young couple came up to me from the Bay Area, raving about having bought my book last year when they were here, and they come every year. And it was so fun because I got to know them, and they were only here for 4 days and wishing they could get out on the water. So we went canoeing last evening over at Springy Point and had just a lovely sunset paddle.
It's easy to fit into Sandpoint. I think someone who moves here or visits here with kind of the right attitude slides in very quickly.
It's true. Jane, you've been here a long time, but tell us how you came to be at the Idaho Mythweaver. Tell us about that.
Well, that's an interesting story, Julie. I was, having lived sort of close to the land all the years I've been here, I was very interested in ethnobotany, the plants around me, And so I started learning about the native plants and then started going, well, there must have been first peoples here. Where are they? And I couldn't find out any information from around the area. You know, there were Indians, but who were they? And so on. So I started to do a little research. But then it kind of expanded into the state as far as who the Indian tribes were. You know, I was driving through north and south and east and west in Idaho for 9 years before I ever realized I was going through reservations. So I was pretty ignorant. And when I started to explore a little bit more, that's kind of where I gained a lot of interest in the cultures. But I was interested in their stories and their mythology. And it was their storytelling that first kind of brought the Myth Weaver into existence. And our mission, we are a 501c3 nonprofit, and we're celebrating, last month was our 27th year here. And we had quite a celebration down at City Beach with a couple of boat tours on Lake Pend'Oreille cruises with the Kalispell tribe, who were the first people here. And so stories were really what drew me into their story and their culture. Our mission is to support and help promote their authentic cultural traditions.
And is that an oral tradition? So in writing about them, you're recording some of that oral history.
Actually, oral histories are my specialty. And even though I'm hesitant sometimes to call myself an oral historian because I'm not necessarily trained in that.
So do the Myth Weavers focus in on the oral histories of the one tribe or of multiple tribes in the area?
We worked with all of Idaho tribes mm-hmm. Because the centennial was happening. And we created this really interesting project called the Idaho Native American Storytelling and Environmental Education Project.
That's a mouthful.
We call it INESCEEP, which almost sounds like an Indian word, but I'm sure it isn't. But that we actually created 5 half-hour radio documentaries, which are available at the Sandpoint Library, by the way.
I'll have to get those.
Yeah, it's called Idaho Keepers of the Earth. And we were trying to draw, the stories and connect them to environmental education. Because an environmentalist is sort of who I've been ever since I can remember, anyway.
And how did it develop from there? You're the director, so something must have, happened.
I was one of the co-founders. Two other people from the Boise area co-founded it. But we were sort of interested in folk arts to begin with. But it morphed into Native American culture when storytelling was sort of our emphasis. And the stories that I was most attracted to were Native American stories, but we didn't feel comfortable telling them. The people needed to tell them, and that really wasn't happening. So we were sort of on the cusp of being pathfinders in that arena. Now, it's common.
So tell us a little bit about how you went about engaging with some of the Native storytellers.
Well, that's kind of a magical story, because we had a legislator, Jeannie Givens, who's a Coeur d'Alene tribal member. We had an Idaho legislator who was
very nice.
Was a Native American, imagine that. And I had contacted Jeannie and said, I'm interested in trying to do this project involving all 5 tribes. And what do you think? And it just so happened that there was a group at the time called the Idaho Indian Alliance. And it was made up of chairman and vice chairman of all the 5 tribes. Well, now we have 6 tribes in Idaho, because it took until the year, 2000, for the Kalispell people, who are the people of our area, to even be acknowledged as an Idaho tribe. So at that time, there were just the Kootenai tribe of Idaho, the Nez Perce tribe, the Coeur d'Alene tribe, and the Shoshone Paiute and the Shoshone Bannock from southern Idaho. And it just so happened that they were having this conference or this meeting And it, again, it was about the time of our centennial celebration. And so they were meeting in Boise, and Jeannie says, get down to Boise and make a presentation about your project. Because you really can't do things in Indian country without the blessing of tribal councils, and we never have. We've always had the support of tribal leaders, cultural departments, you know, their tribes. So it's like dealing with governments. It's really interesting. So I took on that opportunity, never having spoken to tribal leaders before or anything else. And culturally, I don't know if it's changed any, but culturally, Native people don't look you in the eye. And so I'm in the meeting, and they're discussing all kinds of important things. And I have 10 minutes, the end of their long agenda, before they all race off on airplanes to fly home and to do my presentation. And it was mysterious and magical because I had had a really powerful dream the night before. It had to do with animals and wolves and stories and howling. And so when the 10 minutes came up, there was just no way I could tell the whole project. So I shared my dream and my interpretation of what it meant and about the project. And the next thing I knew, the chairman of the alliance, who was Nez Perce, Alan Pinkham, highly respected elder and historian, said, do I hear a unanimous approval of this project? And suddenly there was a vote, and everyone passed it and walked out of the room. And I, Jeannie Givens, just couldn't even believe I was sharing a dream. But I remember Basil White, the Kootenai elder, as we were going down the elevator together, and I was still kind of stunned, like, what just happened? You know, because no one was looking at me. Everyone was looking down as they were listening to me, and I just got brave and told my dream. And that was the right thing to do. And he said to me, and you know, he goes, you know that dream? And I said, yeah. And he goes, don't ever forget that dream. And, you know, I haven't. There have been times.
So that's a really incredible story, and I think it's very, I can picture that happening. How do you take that from concept level like that to what's the next step? How do you turn that into a story?
Well, then I started, because I was the radio producer, our board at the time, which was small, but an all non-native, I might add, I just launched into visiting reservations and starting to interview elders. They had this All-Idaho Indian Expo at the same time at Boise State University. So a lot of the tribal leader or cultural people were there. And some of the people I met were at that event. And like Corbin Harney from the... And the, you know, it's interesting, Phil, because all of these people are gone now. And I'm working with their oral history, their archive. You know, that's one of the, our biggest projects right now is to raise the funds to digitize all of these original recordings on cassette. We've digitized and they're in libraries through the help of the Idaho Humanities Council, our completed radio programs, but the raw tape is what we're tackling now and trying to preserve it because the elders are all gone, all but one, I think, is deceased, and there are no copies. I wasn't very smart about that back in those days, but I wasn't a trained radio producer either.
That's a big project, was that digitizing.
It is, and mm-hmm. It's expensive because I'm trying to do it in real time. These tapes are 25 years old or older.
So it sounds like the focus was on the story, not necessarily the storyteller.
Yes, and as the Native people would say, as the storyteller would tell you, the story lives outside of the storyteller. It lives out here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The storyteller is sort of a channel for bringing it alive.
Are they continuing that oral tradition now,
yes,
passing it on to the next generation?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's what was so amazing about this project. And, you know, people go, well, how come you chose to work with Native people? Well, I had a Native encounter when I was a five-year-old. And in Ohio, where I grew up. And he was a man who was at a little amusement park for children, and on Sundays we would go there after church, and I just was drawn to him. And actually at that same All-Idaho Indian Expo, I had a memory of him. I had forgotten that he was in my life. And I have his photograph because my brother found a picture that my dad had taken of the two of us. And we're shaking hands. And it almost looks like, you know, we're making an agreement. And I was five, which just goes to show you never know what will happen in life. But I think, you know, I'm just drawn to their value system, their belief system. They're very spiritual people. They live with great gratitude to the land, and that all is a gift from the Creator. And subsequently, you take care of it. You don't abuse it. You don't acquire it. You don't accumulate it, you know, exploit it. And those were all values I personally held. So I've learned a great deal, continue to do that in learning. I'm always learning every day.
So those are some of the themes that might be found throughout the stories that you've been helpful in collecting?
Yes. And we started working with the Kalispel about 15 years ago. And now, I guess the two tribes we've worked the most with have been the Nez Perce and the Kalispel. And we've gotten closer and closer to the Kalispel, especially in the last 5 years. And, for example, we've done these boat tours that started with the cultural director, Francis Kaluuya. And this summer, we're about to go into our fourth boat tour. We usually do one a year, maybe. And there seems to be a lot of interest right now in who the people are. And it's partly because they're the ones sharing the story.
And Jane, why do you think only those two? Why would you say you're most associated with those two tribes rather than all of them?
Well, first of all, we're a volunteer organization. I'm a volunteer director, so there's no paid staff, number one. And it's just the size of Idaho and the expanse and the reservations. Most people don't even know about the Duck Valley Reservation, which is down in the southwest corner, of Idaho, straddles Nevada and Idaho, and the Owyhee Canyon area and the Owyhee River. It's an incredible place. And the Fort Hall Reservation is down outside Pocatello. So those are areas that are distant. So the expense, we were very lucky to receive grant money, mostly from the Idaho Humanities Council, some from a patron in Boise who grew up near Fort Hall and wanted to support it. And that, you know, we just received a donation from a woman in Spokane, Washington, who typically supports the arts and music, and just gave us a nice $2,500 gift for the archive preservation. She's 101 years old.
Mm. Nice.
Retired physician, and she just asked me what I did and what our organization was, and we were talking about the music conservatory because she just made a gift to the music conservatory, and it just kind of threw me. I just was like, wow. So you never know what'll happen, what gift will come.
That's right. Well, you've mentioned that you're working on the archive and digitizing that, but what else is happening with the Idaho Myth Weaver these days?
These, you know, we're having a boat tour on Thursday. That's why I don't want to hear about thunderstorms, please. Especially between 10:30 and 12:30. We're going to stay close to City Beach because the Kalispel, Anna Armstrong, who's the director of education for the tribe, she will be leading the tour. This tour is going to be a little different. I'm still unclear about who and how many folks are going to be on it. Hope Linda's not listening.
So tell us a little more, for those who are listening who might not be familiar with the local boat tours, what all that involves, where it goes.
Well, it's we charter the Lake Pendere Cruises boat, the Shawnee's, and we have done tours in the Clark Fork Delta to this week's tour. The summer tours are in Sandpoint from City Beach. And we actually choose to go along the Pendere Bay Trail. And as far as Kootenai Point, we're going to linger in those 2 hours because that is really important traditional Aboriginal property, land to the Kalispel. There were gathering sites and trading areas and a lot of camping sites. You know, the Kalispel lived on this landscape surrounding us, close to 4 million acres for 10,000 years. That's what the archaeological evidence shows. And it's truly hard to even fathom that. And, you know, but they have, the cultural traditions they keep alive today are the same ones that were kept alive or evolved in the past. And the foods that they gather and use and the other cultural traditions, their prayers, their sweat lodge, their winter ceremonies, their where some tribes in the plain states will do sun dances and so on in the summer. And the Salish tribes, of which Kalispel is part of the Salish group, are their beliefs focus on the winter ceremonies. And when they believe the veil between the two worlds is the thinnest. And so, you know, there's just a lot of culture and stories and spirituality that's shared on these boat tours from their point of view, not from... The Myth Weaver is basically a good... It's becoming more and more of a facilitator. Another project, I can tell you about it, which I think is exciting. How are we doing that?
Well, just one question. I'm wondering who attends. What's your typical attendee on the cruises? Is it a person from the area? Is it a Native American person?
The last boat tours, we had to go to two. The Daily Bee put a wonderful story on the front page about the tour from June, and suddenly the phones were ringing off the hook. It's the general public, and we have Kalispel tribal members. Here's a fascinating fact for you. The last tour in July and then the one in June, we had the chairman of the Kalispel tribe, Glenn Ninema, who has been chairman for 40 years on council for 43, which I think is a record in Indian country. It's the first time he'd ever been on Lake Pend'Oreille. So even though this 4 million acres is their traditional Aboriginal homeland and territory, and the Kootenai would come down and visit, you know, even the Nez Perce sometimes would come up, the Coeur d'Alene would visit Lake Pend'Oreille, especially in the southern part of the lake. You know, they were encroached upon and pushed out of their following the seasonal rounds for foods and hunting and fishing, and their reservation, which took until 1915 to be established by executive order by President Wilson, is only 4,600.
The Kalispel Reservation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The Kalispel Reservation. Prior to that, they were just this, they were not a treaty tribe. They didn't want to leave the area of their mm-hmm. traditional land. So it's an incredible story, one that, again, I continue to learn from about every day. I'm very lucky. There are three bands of Kalispel. The lower Kalispel were on the reservation in Usk, Washington, on the Pend'Oreille River, which was traditional winter gathering village site. And the upper Pend'Oreille, they're called, but they're upper Kalispel, upper Pend'Oreille, on the Flathead Reservation, who were really more of the eastern part of the lake, Clark Fork River into Montana. Thompson Falls was the winter village sites. And then the Chewila Band, which are over the Chewila Pass Mountain, the ski area 49 North is. And that valley of Kalispel, I'm working with a 92-year-old elder, been gathering her oral histories, and she's remarkable, one of the most incredible elders I've worked with in 27 years. And she remembers the last powwow in Sandpoint. She was 6 years old. She remembers the last salmon gathering, salmon tribal gathering at Kettle Falls when she was six. And I just went to the canoe gathering there at Kettle Falls. This first time in 86 years they had gathered there. She remembers it.
Wow. So
you mentioned the Kootenai tribe and the Coeur d'Alene and the Nez Perce also came to the lake at times. And so what were their interactions with the Kalispell like?
I believe, the Kootenai, I think it was fairly friendly, but it was mainly based around trade. Okay. And because, again, these are hunter-gatherer cultures, all of them. And so they moved around. They had a vast geographical area and territory, and they all respected that. They didn't. Later on, they went into buffalo country and hunted buffalo in Montana, and sometimes intertribal conflicts would occur because of the buffalo, between the Blackfeet and the Salish peoples. Although there's some interesting stories about how the Kalispell and the Blackfeet, because of an animal event having to do with badger, gave them more respect for the Kalispell. So they didn't have a lot of the conflict that some of the other tribes had. But, prior to that, they were really hunting deer and caribou. More caribou were on the landscape here than there were deer at the time, which when you think about the endangered species and the handful we have left, it's kind of remarkable. So that was a major food, deer and caribou and bear. We would hunt bear, even though the bear has great spiritual meaning. Their creation story has to do with bear. And they're an emergence culture, like the Hopi, coming from another world. The Kalispell came out of the lake.
Interesting. Yeah.
So it's I could talk for hours about her culture.
Well, you were talking about foods that the native tribes were eating, and the way that we were first introduced, Jane, was on a tour of Morris Creek Trail, where we talked about medicinal foods. Now, not necessarily for the Native Americans, but I think somewhat for them too. And we've really been learning about that, you and me. Well, you're probably learning less than I am, but it's so interesting. Yeah, it really is.
And there were some of the plants that we talked about on the trip. The Devil's Club, for example, was a powerful tonic. Remember James talking about that, and the herbalist James Flocini. And I know the Kootenai tribe has used the Devil's Club. I'm not sure about the Kalispell. I have not heard them talk about that use. But, almost every plant on the landscape had a use, whether it was medicinally or for food.
So true. Very interesting.
So if you're just tuning in, this is 88.5 KRFY, community-supported radio for North Idaho. And this morning's morning show guest is Jane Fritz, the director for the Idaho Myth Weavers. We're going to take a short musical break here, and then we're going to come back. We're going to talk more about foods and some upcoming events and a little bit more about the background of the Myth Weavers. There's an awful lot of storytelling to be told about the storytellers, I think. But right now, we're going to segue into some Jack Gladstone. And that was Jack Gladstone, Tapping the Earth's Backbone, by the album of the same name. We're back with Jane Fritz from the Idaho Myth Weavers.
And Jane, why don't you tell us a bit more about Myth Weaver and what your current projects are, the most important ones?
Well, bringing us to the present, the boat tours are a way for the general public to learn a little bit. This upcoming boat trip, the reason I'm not sure how many people are coming, and if there's anyone who really wants to attend, you can give me a call. Can I give my phone number?
Yes.
It's 265-8323, and I can, let you know about it. I'm not sure yet how many Kalispell are coming. We're trying to make this boat tour a little different. And yes, we have a website. It's just a landing page, but it's mythweaver.org. And Mythweaver, all one word. MYTHWEAVER.
But not a way to sign up for a boat tour. Better to call you?
Yes. All right. You can send me an email from the website, but a phone number would be, using the phone would be better. Anyway, we hope to have some actually government leaders and environmental group leaders on this tour to meet with tribal leaders, a chance to have a dialogue that doesn't happen very often, and being on Lake Pendere is a perfect place for that to occur for a couple of hours. And so anyway, I haven't heard yet from the mayor, Sandpoint. I'm hoping, and the city administrator, city planner. We've got, hopefully, Eric Grace from the Kinnexu Land Trust coming, and we've got some people from the Priest Lake Museum. And anyway, I hope it'll be a very engaging time. But in addition to the boat tour,
And what day is that?
Yeah. That's Thursday morning, this Thursday the 18th, from 10:30 to 12:30. And so, like I say, we're still taking a few reservations. So if you're really interested, call today.
Well, hopefully all those invitees are listening to our
morning
show and they'll feel compelled.
I will call them today if I do not hear from them. But anyway, they expressed interest, and I'm just waiting for, kind of final details from them. But that's an exciting opportunity to me, for the Myth Weaver to facilitate that kind of intergovernmental kind of gathering. Why are we here? Why are we interested in this incredible landscape and in this incredible lake? They are trying to be more engaged in the Sandpoint area now, the tribe. And I think boat tours have really helped with that. And in addition to talks that we've done at libraries and museums and so on in the area, Anna Armstrong and I have done some work. Francis Kaluuya is still the cultural director of the tribe, he is so busy, and he's getting, he's in his 70s now, trying to retire, so he used to be the person who always worked with us. I'm hoping Francis will be coming over for the Lummi totem pole visit.
And do you know a bit about the Lummi totem pole visit? Because that's an interesting upcoming event for Native peoples.
Well, I think what's exciting, Julie and Phil, is that the Native people are really taking stands on environmental issues like never before, having to do with salmon restoration, having to do with coal and oil trains, the Lummi totem pole journey. These are master carvers of totem poles from the Lummi Nation on the Northwest Coast. I worked with Swinomish tribe. And so they are right next door. And the Swinomish both the Lummi and the Swinomish are salmon cultures. I mean, this is who they are. And they have lived in their areas for 10,000 years. So you're talking about a culture that stands to lose their salmon. When that happened at Kettle Falls, when Grand Coulee Dam was built, that had a dramatic impact on lots and lots and lots of tribal people and their main food. The Lummi are salmon people, and so they're very concerned about the coal terminals being built. And so the totem pole is a symbolic, spiritual thing that they're visiting communities all over the place. And Sandpoint is lucky to be one.
So, draw the picture for us. Is it a specific totem pole they're bringing, or is it a process that they're doing while they're here?
No, it's a carved pole. And it's quite impressive. And the totem carving tradition for the Lummi and several of the coastal tribes. Mm-hmm. And those are coastal Salish people, so they're related in dialect, in language root to the Kalispel, who are interior Salish. And so it's a symbolic, powerful symbol of their culture to draw attention and to the whole Coltrane and terminal issue.
So what are some of the other stops on the tour? They're not coming only to Sandpoint.
You know, I'm not sure. No, we were asked to help make sure that the Idaho Conservation League is and the Lake Pondere Waterkeepers are the main sponsors of this event. We were asked to help bring the Kalispell into the picture, and waiting for confirmation on that, but I'm hoping Francis will come over and do a blessing because he is the spiritual leader of the Kalispell, so it would be very appropriate. And to do a blessing here on our beach because we are part of the transportation system for coal and oil. This has to do with the coal terminals, but the oil, and actually, you know, the Lummi have been successful in drawing attention to, I think one of the terminals has been declined because of them. Again, you're going to talk about that, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll do a more in-depth look at the event and the Tonopah tour next week.
That's right.
But it's good. It's a good framework to bring it up in with the conversation this morning and the oral traditions or the Kalispell tribes that you've captured. And I know that there are other programs that the Idaho Mythweavers are working on. On the break, we had a little background conversation about the education program.
Right. I'd like to mention that. As I mentioned, in 2000, Kalispell people were finally considered to be an Idaho tribe. And I think it took till 2004 for any mention in the Idaho history textbook for fourth grade. All fourth graders in Idaho learn about our state's history. That includes a small portion about the Native people, these five, six groups. Well, the Kalispell have just a couple of paragraphs. So we created an education project where we have gone now into three schools. Our last year's school was Priest River. We've received funding the last 2 years from the Idaho Forest Group, which has been really wonderful. And prior to that, from the Bonner County Human Rights Task Force and from the Idaho Humanities Council and one of their teacher incentives programs. Anyway, this year we haven't chosen a school yet because the board decided, and two of the members of our board, we have a Kalispell tribal member and a Nez Perce tribal member who are co-vice presidents, Chet Bluff and Diane Malikan, who is a retired interpreter from the Nez Perce Historical Park. So she was a National Park Service employee for 27 years. Anyway, at our recent board meeting in May, we discussed about making our school project not just one school a year. So right now we're creating an education committee to really study it. I'm not sure what will happen yet this winter, but it's an immersion project where Kalispell tribal members, cultural members come into the school and basically do an immersion on Kalispell culture.
What does that mean? What is happening?
So they give some information about history, the language, who the people are, but then they teach the youth some traditional skill. The first year at Washington Elementary, we made, every student made a hoop game, which is made out of willow and sinew, and had a great time. The next year at Farman Stidwell, what did we do at Farman Stidwell? Oh, we played the skunk game. You know, we try to make some of the cultural things. They're fourth graders, after all.
All right. It's got to be a little fun.
And then last year at Priest River, we had we brought the big drum in and taught them some powwow dancing, circle dancing, and that was great fun, including the happy dance, which is really meant for kids.
Yeah.
But then we go into the classroom, and that's kind of a general assembly for fourth, fifth, and sixth graders. And then, you know, the game with the fourth graders or some cultural tradition. And then we take a break for a few months, and the kids then study on their own about the Kalispell. We provide a lot of curriculum materials and also lesson plans. So that's a big part of the project. It's not just this one visit. And then the Kalispel will come back to the classroom and listen to what the kids have learned. And the youth then make presentations. Amazing stuff these kids present. Sometimes they're little dioramas and, you know, it's just so impressive. And the Kalispel, then if they don't get the information quite right, there's a dialogue going on. It's just been wonderful.
Historically, it was an oral tradition. Is this mainly done orally, or are the children reading, or is it mostly conversation?
Well, when they come back to the classroom, it's all in
of conversation. Course.
And mm-hmm. we usually have a good time at the end. We sometimes bring fry bread or some traditional food to share. And I was just really impressed with the Priest River Elementary students, because they seem to be closer to the landscape. Maybe it's because of the timber industry with a lot of their, you know, family members. But they understood hunting and fishing more than some of the kids in our town. And so they could relate to the kids in a good way. But the kids are allowed to ask questions. And so it's a wonderful dialogue. And then we survey each of the kids afterwards. We have an evaluation form. What I was so impressed with on the Priest River Elementary students is they were really concerned that other kids beyond them would learn this. You know, mm-hmm. The fourth graders next year, I hope they get a chance to do this, which I had never heard from a fourth grader before. Right. Thinking of the future. You know?
Paying it forward.
Yeah.
That's pretty
awesome.
Nice.
So I'm not sure what school we'll choose this year, but we'd really like to do all of the fourth grade in Bonner County in the Lake Pendere School District, and maybe in the West School District as well. So we'll see. The other project that just briefly mentioned, and hopefully I can come again on to the station and talk about our upcoming second year of our Native Heritage Film Series, which we do in partnership with the Sandpoint Library. And this year, thanks to funding from the Bonner County Human Rights Task Force and the Idaho Community Foundation and Stacy Stovall from Trans Eco Services. And that, we're going to show five films, Native American films, that are more contemporary with, you know, produced from the Native point of view. Last year we showed all documentaries. I'm not sure yet. We haven't chosen the films yet. We're in that process, but they will begin in November. And once a month, second Saturday of each month from November through March.
And these films could be from Indian tribes all over the country. They're just produced by Native.
They're produced Americans. By Native directors, producers, you know, the authentic story again, because that draws in our mission. And last year's, my favorite film of the series last year was the one on John Trudell, which was a documentary.
So where does it go from here? What's the future hold for the Mythweavers and the work you're doing?
Well, I hope our education project will continue, because so many people don't know about the Kalispel in our backyard. In fact, that's the name of the education project, Kalispel Heritage in Our Backyard. And so I hope we can continue with our education project, expand it maybe beyond just Bonner County. It would be nice to see the materials we've put together be used all over the state. Again, fourth graders and maybe beyond fourth grade, you know, into the schools. So I'm not sure yet where that will go, but the education project hopefully will continue. And our archive is really priority right now, getting that digitized. Mm-hmm. We talked about maybe doing a blog spot and podcasts from those. Mm-hmm. It's a little problematic because these are materials that were gathered a long time ago, and we really need to make sure that we have tribal support on bringing them anew.
Yes, and introducing them into the internet, I suppose. That might
That's very
be
scary.
A
yeah.
topic for discussion, right?
So we're running a little short on time, but any last minute thoughts, Jane? Anything we've missed that you want to talk about, or upcoming events you want to talk a little bit more about the boat tour?
No, I think just if you're interested in the boat tour, although I'm hoping we're going to be fairly close to full. We can only take 30 people on the trip. So that But, you know, if you can't do it this year, I can get your name and for next year. And I think that's mainly all I want to say about that. And we may do more in the community. I'd like to see more done in the community to make those connections.
And Jane, how, if folks are interested in helping out, if you're needing volunteers, is that something you're looking for? And how would they reach you?
Again, either on the website, by email, or by phoning.
And is it volunteers you're looking for, or funding? What's your main?
Support is, you know, at this point, helping us support. And the phone number again is 208-265-8323.
And that website one more time?
MythWeaver.org.
Very good.
Well, thank you, Jane. It's been a wonderful morning. There's so much more we could have talked about. We'll have to have you back again sometime in the future.
Yes. Oh, I'd love to talk about some of the foods that most people don't know about.
Yeah. We'll have a food show in the future.
And we did not get to talk about artifacts either, Jane, so we've got to come back to that.
Okay.
Well, for now, we're going to do a little music break with one of the festival favorites, the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit about upcoming calendar events. So stay tuned. Rippling Waters, the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band, a festival favorite, their fourth appearance at the festival this last weekend. Julie?
Sorry I missed them. Well, Phil, we've just finished a really interesting interview with Jane Fritz, the director of the Idaho Myth Weaver, and it was great. It was great to hear about the work that she's done.
Yeah, so much to talk about. If you tuned in late and didn't hear all of the show, you can listen to it on a podcast. It will be up on the website in the next couple days. And as always, if you like the morning show but are going to be out of town, you can listen to us live streaming at krfy.org.
Or catch the podcast, as you've already said. Well, let's talk about what's happening this week, Phil. On the 17th and 20th, we have the Keeper of Lost Causes. That's at the Panada at 300 North First Avenue. And they will be hosting screenings of the film Keeper of Lost Causes. It adapts the first of UC Adler Olson's popular series of Department Q crime novels with Carl, and I hope I get this right, Mork. Anyway, show times are at 5:30 p.m. and 8:30 p.m. on August 17th and 3:30 p.m. on August 20th. Additionally, the artist studio tour continues, and that's this weekend, the 19th through the 21st. It's the 12th annual self-guided driving tour of working studios throughout North Idaho. You can reach them at arttourdrive.org or by calling 800-800-2106.
And what a great opportunity to go see not only the artwork, but the artists themselves and where they produce the work, where the genius comes from.
It must be almost as good as the Bonner County Garden Tour. I'll have to check that out this weekend. One last item will be the 22nd Annual Afternoon Tea, Bonner County History Museum. And that's that will be a traditional afternoon tea in an elegant outdoor setting. And you can reach them for tickets at 208-263-2344. And that's on the 20th. Yeah.
And of course, tomorrow morning, join us again for the morning show at 8 a.m. here at 88.5 FM. Morning show hosts Chris Bessler and Susie Perez will host the local Sandemonian Comic-Con event organizers. That's at 8 a.m. And then on Thursday, the morning show with Jim Healy and Jack Peterson, they'll be hosting a variety of artists who are participating in this week's art studio tour. So learn more about that also at 8 a.m.
That's right. And next Tuesday, join Phil and me. That'll be August 23rd. We'll be having two guests. First will be Eric Morgan of the U.S. Forest Service, and we'll be talking more about fire, but more on the regional scale rather than the local scale. And we'll finish up with a little more information about the Lummi Totem Pole journey.
So for now, we're running out of time, but we do have a sad commemoration today. This was Elvis Presley's death date.
It is. But it was the day that Ringo Starr joined the Beatles, so there was an upside.
I was going to say, of course, that's if you believe that he actually died. Some think he's still alive and producing music somewhere.
Very true, Phil. That's the way to look at it.
So Elvis Presley, the Heartbreak Hotel.
Have a great week, everyone.